Brian Geisinger is joining us right now as part of the League Pass Lair. The other part of the League Pass Lair is Brendan Whitted. And so we can't all three be on at the same time.
Actually, you can. It just depends who's talking. Oh yeah.
Okay. All right.
I'm 44% sure.
I'm still the substitute teacher and learning new technologies and new things as we go. They are the League Pass Lair. So let's first start with a very important thing. We're going to convert this thing over to the Center Ice Saloon. How about the Canes in Game 7? Are you nervous or confident? Brendan, we'll start with you and your Golden Girls t-shirt.
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I brought out the girls today, because we need that good energy for the Hurricanes. It's Game 7. I've been tangentially following the series. So let's do that hockey. Let's do that.
Very good answer. Brian Geisinger, I already stole your answer of you root for Canes and then chaos. So, yeah. But yeah, there is the just if you're a sports fan, a Game 7 in your hometown is kind of a cool thing.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on a Canes and Bruins Game 7?
Yeah, I'm here for max chaos. Yeah. I feel like that's a cool thing. Game 7s are cool. Again, I'm sure a lot of people that are like true blue Carolina Hurricanes fans don't like it.
Yeah.
Because you just got to be anxious for a couple of days, and then the season could be over in the drop of a hat, and that seems almost unfair, especially considering how good of a season they've had, being up two games, zip, whatever. But for me, as a casual fan, I like it. It's kind of cool that a Game 7 of the playoffs will take place, like, you know, less than 2 miles away from where I live. I kind of like that aspect of it, too. I do worry about the Canes having a Game 7. I said this earlier to you today. I do worry about the amount of, like, NC State vibes hanging overhead. Like, that seems like a daunting place to host a Game 7. Look, like, with all of the karma floating around inside that building, I'm worried because of that.
When the ice is on the floor, it's a different place, okay?
Yeah.
When the ice
better
is down,
hope so.
It's a different place. The Canes could not do what the Miami Heat did last night, and that is take care of business and close out the series, avoiding a Game 7. Jimmy Butler made it clear that he thought the 76ers made the wrong choice in choosing him over Tobias Harris. Let's steal from Saved by the Bell and play What I Should Have Done Theater. Brendan, we'll start with you. Did Philadelphia make the wrong move by not believing more in Jimmy Butler, or is that forgetting whatever was actually happening at the time when Philadelphia was making the decision?
I mean, he definitely looks like the one they should have been backing. And it's very easy to kind of do this now, because he did it in Minnesota. He kind of talked his way out of Minnesota.
Yep.
Talked his way out of Philly. And for a while, it looked like he was just this kind of cantankerous person that can't get along with anyone. Turns out he just didn't like the people that he was playing with because he didn't think that they were tough enough. And that's the long and short of it. And people have had conversations about Karl-Anthony Towns toughness since. They've had conversations about Tobias Harris and that Philadelphia organization since. He's kind of proven to be right, and I don't know if anybody fits better in a culture, and I kind of roll my eyes sometimes with the Heat culture. I think they get maybe a little bit too much credit for just culture stuff, but there's front office. Yeah, there's no front office that does a better job of finding diamonds in the rough than that organization. Like that, I mean, and that's immeasurable to an organization, because it's not under the cap, right? Like your scouts and your front office people, those aren't things under the cap. So you can have as much talent as you can get in that situation. They've taken full advantage. They look fantastic, and they look like they might be the Eastern Conference representative, depending on, I guess, you know, what happens with the Bucks and Celtics.
Yeah, to do like some of the revisionist history with the Sixers, you've got to remember where they were in 2019.
That's what I know I'm not thinking of. Like, I'm not actually thinking of all the ramifications of contracts.
Because,
and so, like, yes, that's where Jimmy Butler might not be being fair.
Because well, for one, they may have won the championship very well that season if the Kawhi Leonard shot lips out, right? Like the Kawhi Leonard shot that hits 17 different spots of the rim and then drops in.
So that was Butler's last game with the Sixers?
Yes, that was the last play he was ever involved in.
And then they went on and won the title.
It's also important to remember, too, Ben Simmons, who's their hotshot rookie, but he's coming off, this is his second full year in the NBA. He won the Rookie of the year before. He's an all-star this season in 2019, and it was made clear, apparently, that like Jimmy did not like that Ben didn't like that Jimmy had the ball, right, to close out these games. Now, you understand I think you can understand why at the time Philadelphia picked Ben. He was younger. They had him under a rookie contract. You think he's going to age better. You don't know how Jimmy's going to age. And to be clear, like, Jimmy missed a lot of time this season too. Like, he's a guy that, as great as he is, and he is great, he is a guy that is often, you know, can be hurt a lot nowadays. Now, Ben Simmons also didn't play a second this season. Right. So if you want to look at it and say, like, oh, they picked Ben versus Jimmy, they probably didn't make the right call in that situation, but you can see the process behind why they would have picked Simmons in that type of scenario. Younger, rookie contract, and he was sort of their guy, right? And so it's, you know, unfortunately it didn't work out, you know, for Philadelphia, but yeah, incredible series by Butler. He's playing phenomenal basketball in the postseason.
He's fun to watch. He's a fun player, obviously. The other player that people are talking a lot about coming out of that game is James Harden. Now, I'm not going to don't take this comparison too far, okay? But I feel like he is eking his way into a category of player that Dwight Howard has been at one time, that Russell Westbrook. I'm going way back with Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard's had a few years now where he's like fallen off, but where they still possess singular skills that are elite among the NBA elite, right? The ability to score or shoot, or in Dwight Howard's case, to defend and rebound, to be as big as he is and move, you know. But it's just hard to picture a scenario where your team can be great with that player playing the way they want to play. Is that I don't know what we named that club. Yes, you would still sign. Yes, they still belong in the NBA. But in terms of I'm trying to build a championship team, I don't know how to make this really cool, interesting puzzle piece fit on my championship team. Is he in that category at this point?
Well, so it's interesting, and it's complicated by the fact that he could be a free agent this offseason.
That's what I
mean.
So he's got to be thinking about
that. That goes into it. And he's coming off an injury. So, like, we would like to see James Harden with a full offseason to know, hey, if he does his due diligence, he heals the hamstring, does he come back with a burst? Does he have the first step again? Or what counters, what sort of, like, you know, on-ball dark arts can he develop to have the, like, Chris Paul develop the mid-range pull-up? Does James Harden have the mid-range pull-up? Harden was, like, an objectively good basketball player this year, but you can see why, like, you can obviously see, like, some of the skills, the way they atrophied, the lack of burst that wasn't there, even when he was still on Brooklyn at times this season. And to only take 9 shots in the game last night, 43 minutes, 9 shots. They needed more. Like, he has a history of not always coming up in big games and close out games in the playoffs. Phenomenal all-time player, but this is also part of his career resume as well. But they have to maximize this title window around Embiid, right? Like, he just came off his second straight season of basically being the MVP in the league, or MVP, you know, 1B or whatever. And so the window is now. It's now. And Embiid is a guy that also battles a lot of injuries. We're seeing it right now. Like, he's about to get surgery on his thumb or hand or whatever. So you need Harden. It's got to be Harden. They just traded away a lot of stuff to get James Harden. So it's going to be very, very important for him not to just transition to, like, late stage of his career Vince Carter, where he was down to just be, like, a guy that could come in and run some pick and rolls and, like, be a contributor on a winning team. But Philadelphia needs something more than that. I think they still need James Harden to be like an all-star or sub-all-star. And some of that may depend on the development of Tyrese Maxey. Can he become an all-star caliber player next season? Because Harden is still huge for a guard. He's still a tank. He can still really, really pass. He can still be a pressure point on the rim. And he can still shoot. So, like, they need the best version of him that can be available in the year 2022. How do they get there? Again, it's going to be a big offseason for James Harden.
Let me ask you this, Brendan, sticking on the same topic of conversation. Do you think it's like most important, if you could have one of two things, like, create a scenario where Harden returns to the highest possible skill level that James Harden could, like if at his peak he was 100 on whatever the EA Sports video game is, the closest we can get him, if we can get him to 98 or 99, or is it more important for James Harden to fit into Embiid and Maxey getting their best? Does it make sense, the two different things of, like, is it most important for him to be at his best, or is it most important for him to prove that he can play a way where Embiid and Maxey are their best?
It's interesting because the way we got introduced to Harden was as a sixth man. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. As a part of Russell Westbrook, as a part of Kevin Durant and that Thunder team. I think they just need him to be the best version of himself. It's really interesting because you mentioned him having a singular talent. He didn't display that singular talent. They needed that singular talent in game six, and taking two shots in the second half. Like the irony is rich of them trading Ben Simmons, who historically did not do well in the playoffs in crunch time situations, for a guy that once again did not want to shoot and wasn't as involved offensively as you needed him to be. You know what I mean? Like some stuff, him not being great defensively or some of the other issues that he can somewhat possess, that's one thing. But for him not to score that's his thing. That's his bread and butter. And so it's hard to determine whether or not that's disinterest, whether or not he's still, as BG alluded to, still trying to recover from that hamstring injury. It's just weird watching him play and just kind of being another player, considering that he was the engine behind that Houston Rockets team, which was as close as anybody was to beating that Golden State juggernaut when they had KD. So it's just, it's odd seeing this kind of depreciation in his game. And I'm hoping that it's just based on injury. You know, he was never a guy that was super explosive. He always played at his own pace, kind of Paul Pierce, Luka Doncic, that sort of thing. But him losing that ability to step back and knock down those shots, his ability to get around guys, that kind of ruined his entire, you know, his entire offensive repertoire. He still had the assists, but he has to be a generational scorer in order for them to win. And so he has to get back to that if he's going to stay with the team long term and they're going to have any sort of real success.
The step back also always used to be the cheat code for Harden. That was the thing. No one could guard it, right? It was either let him shoot it or tackle him. Like, you don't have a choice. Like, it just there, and he could leverage that to blow by guys and get to the rim and draw a million fouls. And he's a genius passer. Like, he still has that. And because he can still draw defensive attention with his size and ball handling, and because he's an excellent passer, because Embiid is there to draw attention, that duo is really hard to guard. Teams are still going to struggle guarding that now. They ran into a Toronto team that had some stuff to throw at it. If they had made it to play Boston, Boston would have had some stuff to throw at it. But Miami definitely had the right ideas defensively to guard Harden in the Philadelphia in this series. And you saw Miami's defense at times was just overwhelming. And I think ultimately that's got to be the thing that carries Miami, because the half-court offense can get stuck in the mud. Now, when Max Strus plays well like he did last night, things maybe look a little bit easier. When Jimmy Butler plays like that, it works. But Miami's set up to defend you. And that's how they win ball games. And you saw the defense, what they're able to do with their switch, how they show help, how they fly around and recover, really special. And for them, that's got to be their calling card for the Heat as they go forward. And yeah, they just did a great job outside of, you know, stretches of time in game four when Harden went nuts down the stretch of really like bottling him up in this series. So like, it's not all on Harden in his health and the aggression. Some of it is also like Miami is an exceptional defensive team and they were ready to roll at times this series.
I'm looking at the series in the East tonight. Sorry, I'm focusing on the East. I still might be falling asleep a little bit through these Western Conference. I'm just not catching as much of them, okay? I'm falling asleep, but I've been dialed in the East. I've had this theory going on. I want to hear what you guys think about it. It's that if you take the five best players in the NBA, or seven or eight or whatever you want to do, like in your head, when you look at them on paper, the equal distance between one and two as there is two and three and four and five and six. They're just written down in order, right? But in real life, that's not how it is. And so, like, when Michael Jordan was the best player in the NBA, Charles Barkley or Sean Kemp or whoever was number two, but it was a drop in their ability to impact the game. That's how I feel about Giannis right now. I'm not necessarily saying he's the best player in the game. He's almost in that LeBron part of, like, we don't know if he's going to be MVP every year, but he's going to be like top three for MVP.
Yeah.
And it's just ability to change a game we recognize as good every year. So I'm not taking anything away from Jason Tatum. And again, you guys, I don't know what your current rankings are, if he's your fourth best or seventh best or eighth best in the NBA.
Well, he's just 19. So, I mean, he's got a lot of
he'll always be 19.
But, and again, I'm not taking away from him as much as I'm saying, am I crazy to say, yes, he may be close to the top of the best player in the NBA, but he is not – Jason Tatum is not in the category that Giannis is of, I impose will on a game like a Shaq late 90s, early 2000s, like a Kobe through the 2000s, like a Jordan, like a LeBron. Is that fair to say that Giannis is in a class even above a Jason Tatum, who's one of the best players in the NBA, Brendan?
I think that's fair. I think Tatum is right on the precipice of being that sort of guy. I don't think that he's shown it. And look, maybe that changes in this series. He's been good. It's just Giannis is very difficult to deal with. Even without Middleton, this Bucks team is still a bother and a nuisance. And they've been able to get enough from guys like Portis or Connaughton in different games to kind of make up for it. Drew obviously was huge late in game five. Making pretty much every defensive play, like really kind of struggle early in that game and really turned it on both offensively and defensively, obviously making the block and the steal late. He's so difficult to deal with. And it's also difficult to officiate. I mean, I'm one of these guys that, I feel like he gets away with a little bit more. And that's maybe the biggest calling card or indication of you being a superstar as anything. Cause I feel like he gets away with like two or three charges. He gets like two or three additional fouls than nobody else gets. But I probably would assume that was kind of how it was dealing with Shaq. You know what I mean? Where he's backing guys down and moving guys out of the way. And some of it's the fact that he's just stronger and he shouldn't have to suffer the consequences for being just bigger and stronger than everybody else. When he's in transition, he is just a beast to deal with. And I think Boston's done a relatively good job for a large part of the series of making him, especially in the half court, kind of stifling him, throwing Williams in front of him, throwing Horford in front of him. And he's just, even with that, he still finds a way to be extremely dominant in the paint. You know that he's not, even with his, he's taken, I think, 23 pointers. I think he's only hit two or three. Even with his shooting woes, he's still that sort of guy. And I don't think Tatum is quite there yet, but he's had a hell of a season and played well in this series.
You just, no one's physically like Giannis. I mean, he is a one of a kind athlete. I have a memory of seeing he and LeBron play a couple of years ago when LeBron was still in Cleveland, and this is like really like the early stages of the ascent of Giannis, and like LeBron looking at him, and it was probably the first time I've ever seen LeBron. I've watched hundreds, if not thousands, of his games. Of like him having like body envy of another player, like him looking at that and thinking like, wow, if I had that, what could I do? And how many times has that guy ever walked into a room and thought that? Probably never. Like, maybe something with Durant or whatever, but Giannis, his build, his endurance, his athleticism, his reaction times, his awareness, it's incredible. Shooting 75% at the rim in the playoffs, which is just like par for the course with him. And his passing has gotten so good, not just in the playoffs where it's been excellent, but all season. Like he made a noticeable improvement as a passer. Last year it was the floater mid-range that he added. This season it's been the passing. And just really like there's not a lot you can do with him, especially when he's able to, as Brendan was alluding to, administer that much punishment, that much contact with his own frame. So yeah, I don't know what you do with Giannis. Like you can do all the right things and he can still beat it. And because Brendan, like Brendan said too, Boston has done a good job walling up without Horford and Grant Williams and using Robert Williams when he was healthy as a help defender, and they can switch and they're going to help and then recover. It's really, really hard. And Giannis is still just willing this team to victory, playing his mind, playing very well defensively and offensively, just like an absolute force as a ball handler, as an offensive rebounder, as a screen setter, as a DHO guy. He does everything. And what else can you say about him? They shouldn't be winning this series.
Yeah.
No.
They just should not be doing it. They didn't have home court. They're missing an all-star forward in Chris Middleton, who's like the bailout guy that you need against Boston's, switchy defense. And even then, Giannis, and he's getting help. Drew, Bobby Portis was huge defensively for them the other night. But it's Giannis, and you just salute to him. It's incredible. We're living like in his moment right now. It's pretty neat.
Yeah.
He's the reason that they're in the series, and it's clear to see. Even like I said, even though other dudes are obviously making huge plays,
yeah,
and some guys may take over for a moment or whatever. But he has that ability to make other teammates even look better than they are.
Oh,
almost
sure.
Like with Jordan, like when he kicks it to you because he's double teamed. Whoever you are, small white dude that's only making $500,000 a year, you're going to knock it down because Jordan just kicked it to you, right? Like when
Pat C, baby.
When Giannis has done everything to get you there, you're going to be like, you know what? I'm going to make this block and save it. And when Giannis misses the free throw, I'm going to get it and make the putback because Giannis made me do it. All right, final question for you guys. One of my favorite things, one of the things that got me into the NBA went, you know, I grew up obviously in college basketball market, but I got into it through watching the guys that I knew play college in the NBA. I mean, oftentimes just following their box scores or like the list of top 100 scores in the NBA and be like, let me look for the UNC guys and the ACC guys and the Nate McMillans from Raleigh, whatever. Let me pull against the Duke guys, you know. And now it's because I've lessened how much of the NBA I watched compared to in my like mid-20s or 30s, it's a little bit going back to that for like, I love tuning in and seeing Pat Connaughton and Grayson Allen and Reggie Bullock do like, I am pulling, those guys get me as excited. I mean, obviously the incredible plays that the Giannis's of the world make, but give me, it doesn't have to be an ACC guy for you, because I know you guys love all these guys, but also, am I wrong on this? Did Pat Connaughton catch one past the top of the key and like didn't even put it in shooting motion?
That's his thing. He does.
He catches it. He does the
Clay Thompson
thing now.
It's
like a set shot.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
The whole part of that shot is to just get it out as quickly as you can before the Kokolo's out can get there. Like Clay Thompson is like the guy, at least in the modern NBA, that did this. And if Pat Connaughton's doing it, it's like every spot up guy needs to do it too. Because ultimately, like, they're just going to try to run you off the line, right? Yeah. So you just got to be able to get it up on the rim as quickly as you can.
So just that little moment, I was like, Pat Connaughton like barely caught that ball. He volleyball set it into the rim from the three.
Reggie Mannix got some of that stuff too. Like Mannix was doing some
just
of that stuff too.
Touch and release.
Just like not even no dip, just immediately go into shooting range. So, like it's pretty impressive.
But anyway, so that like that's a little moment where I'm like, I love this is a guy that I watched play ACC ball like up close with. Give me a role player still in the NBA that you guys just like get excited about watching every night. Like, dude, I love this dude.
It's like too many of these guys.
You got only one.
I mean, it's easy for me.
Another one. Who's yours?
It's Tuck. PJ Tucker.
Okay.
Raleigh Wood, in low Eagles, shout out. I mean, it's very, very simple. Watching the type of pro he was, because he was out of the league after he got drafted for a little bit. He played in Russia. I think he might have played in China. And the way he built himself into what he is today, like, which is a hard-nosed defender. That's not something he was known for when he was at Texas. That's not something that he came in with, you know. And watching him, hey, I'm going to develop this corner three so that I am a more capable offensive player. I'm going to take on whatever defensive challenges you have, perimeter, post, does not matter. He fits right in with that Miami Heat culture, being able to switch and do whatever they want to do, and just tough. Like, just a tough dude. And even he's even been able to punish some of the smaller guys that they've decided to put on him. When he stands in that corner, you see some of that stuff that he showed in Texas, that 6'4", you know, low post game, like kind of like Bonzi Wells, something like that, like a smaller guy with that back to the basket or offensive rebounding, all that sort of stuff. It's easy for me. PJ Tucker, shout out.
The way PJ Tucker plays right now, also a lot of the game I can be like, that's how I play basketball right now, is I D up. Yeah. If you throw somebody on me that's like 6 inches shorter, I'll go to the
glass.
Post. Then PJ Tucker will like knock down two threes, and I'm like, okay, I'm not a 3-and-D guy. I'm more of just a D. But
I always think of whenever I watch PJ Tucker and Pat Beverly play, I think of something Bomani said about Pat Beverly a couple years ago. Those two guys that played overseas, right, for a long time. Both those guys are part of team hashtag never going back. Like, they got to the NBA, and it's like, we are not going abroad. Like, the planes are nice here. The checks are heavier. Like, I'm here. And like, those guys were contributing to winning teams in the playoffs in 2022. So, yeah. It's
when
working.
You're told, like, shut down Chris Paul,
yes,
or like, guard Giannis.
Yes, whatever you say.
I will do it. Just do not send me back.
So, and by the way, shout out, Brendan mentioned Enloe. Nate McMillan in Raleigh today. Did you see?
Yes, took a picture with Lavelle Moten's bust. We had him on the show earlier this week.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
No.
And by the way, I also saw TJ Warren rocking around downtown Raleigh earlier this week.
I see Warren. He's
often here.
Good eater. Always see him in the Fresh Market. Always buying fresh goods.
The left foot looks like it's still injured. So Pacers fans, I'm sorry. Just like,
did you tweet that out? Did you get a video
of
him
walking?
I
thought about doing a BG bomb while I was out there. But it is cool that PJ Tucker and Danny Green both became like elite role players. If I were to just very quickly do a salute to a local guy, Tyus Jones, who filled in with John Morant last game.
21 points the other night.
21 points, 9 assists. Of course, 0 turnovers, because he is like the top assist-to-turnover guy in professional basketball, going on like 4 or 5 years
now. He's
going to
have a long career.
So salute to him. He played awesome, and he's been terrific all year long, regular season, playoffs, when Morant has been out. He's helped keep that ship afloat in Memphis.
You can see Tyus Jones be a starting point guard for like a team that wins a championship three out of 4 years. He would need to play the right team somewhere. He would have to play. It's not Memphis, but just the right fit.
He would have to play with next to like a guy like Harden in his prime.
Yeah,
it's like you need like a high usage like two guard creator.
But you could see it.
But then Jones is like the secondary guy, the ball handler that got guards, point guards, that kind of stuff.
You could easily see it. The League Pass Layer, Brendan Winnett and Brian Geisinger, we appreciate it. Two game sixes tonight with the potential to close out for the Bucks and the Warriors at home. You know, it's always nice when a team closes out a game six when they have that opportunity.
We would like to try that sometime.
But if they don't, it just means we get a game seven and we're happy to. We appreciate the time. Have a good weekend, fellas.